Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/watsonassistant.
Why do people not believe that that is your real hair?
My hair might fall off. I have no idea why people haven't been sold on the fact that this is my actual hair.
It is. It has changed colors.
I'm wearing a piece.
This has been suggested for years, and I don't understand it. Maybe it's because I've worked next to you and I know your hair is real. But why? You know, this has been this has been a thing forever.
I know. I always tell people, if you don't believe it, just walk up, pull my hair. I'm not going to file charges. Just go ahead, pull my hair. Just see. It's not coming off. All right, so who do you want to fight on Fight Island, John? Who would you want to take on?
Bergman's talking a lot, isn't he? Well,
yeah,
Bergman, I've got like 20 years on Bergman, but he is a chain smoker. We discovered that this week. Cigarettes. Like, he doesn't even smoke weed. He smokes cigarettes. So I think that I could just run circles around him, right?
Oh,
just dart until he was gasping for air, and then, just kick him, where. Right. Who still smokes cigarettes besides Greg Bergman?
By the way, he contends that you were meaner to him than I was. Do you think that was true?
100%.
Yo, you were meaner to him?
Oh, yeah. I'm meaner to Sliwa than
mean.
You are. But yeah, but you were like Mr. Burns and he was Smithers. He did whatever you said. And so, but I would say this is dumb. We shouldn't do this. And then he would blame me because he knew he couldn't blame you. Because if he blamed you, he would have got fired.
Right.
You know, my attitude. Go ahead.
Would you accept a match with Bergman on Fight Island?
How big is is it a caged match or is it just an island that you just fight right there on the beach?
I was going to say we need like details, I guess, because it all depends.
Yeah.
Like if this is like a no holds bar, like everything goes match, then it's totally changes things.
By the way, no one has beaten LZ. Maybe Key, but no one's beaten LZ.
No, LZ is like a ninja.
Yeah, and LZ would cheat. LZ'd fight dirty. LZ's from Detroit. I'm not fighting.
Well,
I want nothing to do with LZ.
Key's old and slow now.
Yeah, but Key could take either one of us pretty easy. And by the way, Key could take Sedano.
Oh,
what's Sedano talking about?
Key would just crush Sedano.
Key was a professional athlete. I don't know what these other morons acting like they could out-athlete Keyshawn in anything. Keyshawn could get in shape in 2 days. I mean, come on, be honest. Sedano thinks he can beat Key in a fight. Are you kidding? Take all the mythical money in my account and bet it on Key.
Are we actually going to do this? Are we going to have fights?
I don't think it's legal.
I think we should have like a simulated Fight Island.
Simulated. Now,
yeah.
How would you go simulating fights?
You would do everyone's like real life measurements and put them into like a game, like one of these UFC games or something, and then have it play out just like you're going to do with your basketball and baseball games.
Yeah. All right. Speaking of simulated, I've got a crazy idea I want to throw out there right at the top of the show. We'll get to the Blake Snell stuff, and Mark Teixeira is coming on today, and there's a lot of negativity in the world. We, as always, are relentlessly positive.
All positive.
So I got to play golf today. In the morning.
Yep.
And so I played, it was like a 2-on-2 golf match. I played, my partner Danny Farag, who's a really good golfer, has a crazy idea. And by the way, the other guys that we beat, Glenn and Eric, are losers. Just wanted to let you know. Danny and I won. Those two guys lost. Glenn, Eric, losers.
Yep.
All right, but here's Danny's idea. And when I first heard it, I thought, that's stupid. And I've been thinking about it all day. So I want you guys, accept the premise of this idea and tell me. I'm sure there's a reason why it wouldn't work, but I'm now fascinated by it.
Okay.
Here's this idea. Okay, picture a basketball game at Staples Center or a baseball game at Dodger Stadium, football game at SoFi, whatever you want.
Yeah.
Okay. His idea is you find a company that makes tablets, like Apple makes iPads, Samsung, or like a Microsoft Surface.
Microsoft Surface, all those kinds of things, yeah.
Okay. All right, and you'll have plenty of time to plan for this because nobody's like close to going back into the stadiums for at least a couple of weeks. And you basically put, and I know this is crazy, but I can't get it out of my head. You put iPads in all the seats that are actually live feeds. So the players, when they look over to the stands, would be looking at virtual fans, would be like you in your living room watching the Rams game. Or me, and sound up. So when we all cheer.
So I could boo, I could cheer.
You could talk right to them.
I could chant.
So think about this. Here's my question. If we all cheered for LeBron at the same time, would that sound like what fans cheering in an arena would sound like? Would that work technically?
Well, it wouldn't sound exactly like it, but it would simulate it to a pretty good degree.
Right, like we were talking yesterday about...
You're talking about a lot of iPads here.
No, but reusable, obviously. You'd have to clean them after everything. But, like, Apple could drop 18,000 iPads into Staples Center, and three different teams play there. The Kings play there, the Clippers play there, and the Lakers play there. So it seems to me... There's got to be a reason why this is an idea that won't work. Yeah. I'm just fascinated by it. Would you think it would be fun for the players if they looked over and saw, like, in the front row? It'd be like me, you, Lindsey Funch, just sitting there watching them on a live feed.
It would probably be more fun for the players. It's a weird concept, but I can't quite figure out why it wouldn't work.
Lindsey, what do you think?
I mean, I just don't think it's a good idea. It would not.
Why?
Be good.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you're right, but why?
I just don't think it would be safe.
Why?
How?
Who cares if you break an iPad? These companies make those iPads for like $2 a pop.
What do you mean? Why wouldn't it be safe?
Well, I mean, if you're just talking about I thought you meant like the actual fights.
No, no,
the actual fights.
There's no fight. You weren't listening, Funch. Were you listening?
I'm listening. I'm just confused.
Lindsay's a conversation behind us.
We weren't talking about fights. Funch, were you listening?
Yeah, I was. How would you do like ticket pricing and all that stuff? Would
free.
It just be free? Wow, okay.
Like you give it to your season ticket holders. You say, would you like to have your virtual seat?
Do you think anyone would want to see anything from like the upper decks or anything, though?
Sure.
Well, but it kind of doesn't matter. It's not so
true.
Much. Well, you're not looking. You're watching it on TV. So it really doesn't matter where your face is in the stadium.
And would they be similar to what it would be if we had 18,000 regular fans? You know, the sound would just be coming out of the iPad.
I see what you're saying. I would rather watch
it. Oh, you still think we're talking about fighting.
No, no, no. I would rather watch it on TV.
No, wait a minute.
You're going to watch it on TV.
On the iPad, too? Why do you need two screens?
No, no. You are just...
What
you're,
time
you're
did you
so
start
lost.
Listening to the show?
You just literally just explained it, talking about watching the game from your seat on an iPad.
No, here's the thing. Lindsay, stay with me here. You're at home watching the game on TV. On top of your TV is some type of a webcam or a device, or you could even... Some smart TVs even have a camera now. You're just watching the game on TV, minding your own business. But in a seat at Staples Center is a shot of you watching the game, and you would be cheering. So the players in the building you'd be a fan. You'd be
okay,
a virtual fan in a seat. Yeah, you're watching the game on your big screen TV or whatever TV you want. The question is, would it work? Would it be? Now, keep in mind, as we've been saying all week, this is a TV show. Professional sports are a TV show. Would that enhance or detract from the TV show? I think it might be cool.
You're right. It's a great idea.
Now it's a great idea.
And Mace,
now it's a great idea.
You could incorporate it at SoFi. You could incorporate the Oculus. Think about it. You could put like 1,000 people on a Zoom screen all cheering for the Rams at once.
Complete sense. The fans on the Oculus makes complete sense. More sense than the idea of putting an iPad on every single seat in every single arena.
Well, keep in mind, the seats are empty.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, but it's still, I think in theory it works. In theory, it makes sense. I think in practice, it probably wouldn't.
I agree, but it probably wouldn't work. Can't get out of my head. I want to see somebody try it. Even in like we've been talking about how somebody might have to play at a high school or at a G League gym. Try it there and see what it looks like. Because then you're only trying it with less than maybe 1,000 seats. Maybe you're trying that with 500 people. I just want to see what it would look and sound like. You know, basically Roger Goodell did this during the draft. He put like a whole bunch of people on Zoom behind him. And he would say, remember, he would turn around
and go,
let's hear it, Chiefs fans.
Go ahead, boo me. Yeah.
So bad calls, all the iPads would boo a bad call at the exact same time?
Yep.
It's not the worst idea in the world, which when I first heard it, I thought it might be. And then I started thinking about it. It actually works, I think.
Yeah.
iPad fans. Virtual iPad fans.
All right.
That is a great idea, John. You should actually
Lindsay,
you should invest.
Look who just
in
got
it.
Here.
No, I'm not going to lie. I was doing an IT thing again. So
hey,
sorry.
When is Brett Michaels coming on the show today?
He is coming on in 8 minutes.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Coming up next. Yeah.
So, I'm trying to think. What? Mace? Did you listen to Poison growing up?
Oh God, yeah, 80s band. I was a DJ during that era. Rose Has Its Thorn was number one for about 6 months.
Did you have to hit the post to a Brett Michaels song?
Oh, I absolutely did.
Oh, you know what? We should totally do that. Like, play, like, Talk Dirty to Me. Wasn't that a Brett Michaels song?
That was. I think that's a short intro. I think Every Rose Has Its Thorn is kind of a classic 28-second intro.
They did a bunch. Didn't they do... I'm trying to think. Was Something to Believe In a cover or an original?
I know they did it. Let me look it up.
I know they did the song.
Yeah, Eddie Money had a song called Something to Believe In, but I think Poison's song is different. I think they're just two different songs.
I mean, Poison was one of the great hair bands, right? They were one of the great Sunset Strip hair bands.
Really, because
of
Brett, yeah.
No, it was by Poison.
Okay, good.
Second single from their 1990 album, Flesh and Blood.
And Rock and Roll All Night was original too, right? That wasn't a cover. That was a Poison original song.
Yes.
They had a lot of hits.
Rock and Roll All Night?
Yeah, you've never heard Rock and Roll All Night by Poison? It was on the mid-80s album. It was on the same album as Life Goes On, I think. Maybe not. I may be off by an album. It was either on Less Than Zero or Flesh and Blood.
Oh, yeah. I know. Now I'm looking at the lyrics. I remember it.
Okay. Yeah, so Brett Michaels is coming up next.
God, what would it have been to be a rock star in the 80s? That's back when...
Well, okay, you know that
you
David...
had groupies everywhere.
Right, I was just going there. Okay, so David Lee Roth... And we'll ask Brett if he ever looked into something similar. David Lee Roth, remember Lloyd's of London would say they would insure you for anything if you were willing to pay the premium? And sometimes
yes.
The premiums was just an outrage. So David Lee Roth had paternity insurance through Lloyd's of London. So if a woman came out of the woodwork and said, I'm pregnant and you're the father, and it turns out that David Lee Roth was the father... Lloyd's of London would have to pay any paternity costs because he had paternity insurance.
That would be expensive.
Right. It was like ridiculously expensive, but apparently to him it was worth it.
Brett Michaels, huge Pittsburgh Steelers fan, huge Pittsburgh Pirates fan. He's from Mechanicsburg, Pennsylvania, which is just north of Pittsburgh. And that means Lindsay is already irritated with him being a Browns fan and being from Cleveland, right?
I mean, I'm not a big fan of the Steelers, but you know what? I can't deny the fact that the Browns have been absolutely terrible for, you know, decades now. And, you know, when you're from Pittsburgh and you're from a team that just kicks our butts year after year because we're so terrible, I can't really get mad at them.
Right. Do you know how many records? Take a guess at how many records Poison has sold worldwide.
God, that one album had
Take
to
a
sell
shot.
Just a ton by itself. I'd say 15 million records.
15? Lindsay, how many do you think?
30 million.
45 million
45
records
million records
worldwide.
That's unreal.
45 million. And the lead singer's coming up.
That's coming up next for you. And by the way, then Mark Teixeira is coming on the show. There have been some comments today from both Trevor Bauer and Blake Snell that indicate that they don't want to start a new season over financial reasons. We've got that coming up for you, too. Mesa in Ireland, 710 ESPN. Has It Thorn. This was a classic song. I was a DJ when this song came out, and I swear, you know, John, you'd break
down
music.
The song went to number one.
You'd break down music into A's, B's, and C's, and this song was an A, a power. It played about an hour and 30 minutes apart all day long, played 18 times a day because it was such a gigantic hit. Gigantic hit. And Bret Michaels was the lead singer of Poison. He's going to join us here in just a minute. Also a huge sports fan. He's from Pennsylvania, huge Steelers fan, huge Pirates fan. And, geez, what's it like to be a rock star? He's got a brand-new book out. It is called Bret Michaels Auto Scrapography. It's got all kinds of cool pictures, and it's got a real look inside Michael's life through the highs and the lows and the fun and the adversity and all that kind of stuff. So Brett's going to join us here in a minute. And,
Mace, by the way, what is my television guilty pleasure?
Vanderpump Rules.
Right. Well, in general.
Reality
trashy
TV.
Reality TV, right?
Yes, yes.
You ever see Rock of Love?
Never did.
Oh, did
I knew you were going to ask.
Oh, it's great.
That was a great show.
It's great. I may beg Brett to bring back Rock of Love. Rock of Love was Vanderpump Rules before Vanderpump Rules. It was fantastic. Oh,
well,
man.
He wants to reboot it. He's thinking about rebooting Rock of Love.
Oh, from your lips to God's ears. You know, the third season of Rock of Love was Rock of Love Bus. Think about that.
I didn't like that one as much.
What is wrong with you? How did
I
you not
the
like the Rock
the house,
of Love bus?
I like the house. And the house
it's
is
a
really
bus.
Really decorated.
It's
too.
A Rock of Love bus. It combines all the things we love. Rock, love, and a bus.
And a bus.
Come on.
By the way, I should let you know that Mark Teixeira is going to join us.
Great guy, by the way.
I was going to say at the bottom of the hour, but instead I will say at 3:40. He will join us. ESPN Major League Baseball analyst. And we've got that sound from Ian Snell coming up. And the sound
Blake
from
Snell.
Trevor, I'm sorry, Blake Snell. Who is
you
Ian
wanna,
Snell?
I don't know, but this these comments are so egregious, you don't want to misattribute them.
I would have to apologize to Ian
Snell. To whoever
Snell,
Ian
whoever
Snell
is. Yeah. And Trevor Bauer, also his comments today about baseball players, at least on from their perspective, shouldn't be willing to work this out financially, shouldn't be willing to bite the bullet in order to get the season underway.
All right, so without further ado, joining us right now in the program, the pride of Pennsylvania and the star of one of the most underrated shows in history, Rock of Love, Bret Michaels. Bret, thanks for coming on, man. How you holding up?
I am doing awesome. How are you guys doing today?
Good, man. Where are you for this pandemic?
I am two locations, but the one I'm at right now is at the ranch in Arizona, and I think I've painted the sport court twice. I've fixed every motorcycle and go-kart engine at least three times over, and just enjoying a little outdoor riding with the kids.
Brett was the lead singer of Poison, one of the great bands of all time. They sold 45 million records worldwide. And Brett, we're going to bounce around a little bit here. We hear you're a big Steelers fan, correct?
That is correct. Born and raised in the Berg, technically in Butler, Pennsylvania, just right near the Berg.
Okay, so I have
can hear your accent. I can hear your accent, Brett. You're from the Berg.
Yoy!
Oh, my God, Yin's going down to see Steelers today.
Exactly.
All right. So, Brett, here's my idea. I've been kind of spewing this on the program for a couple of weeks. Don't you think the Steelers should sign Cam Newton to back up Big Ben? he'd be no threat to Big Ben because Big Ben's going to the Hall of Fame. But Big Ben has gone down in, for injuries in the last 2 years. So if he get and Steeler fans found out what happens if they go to the backup quarterback and the backup quarterback stinks. And Cam Newton's just sitting there, man. Don't you think the Steelers go out, they sign Cam Newton to back up Big Ben. Ben's the starter. Cam's the backup in case Ben goes down and the Steelers are right back where they need to be, which is in the playoff hunt. What do you think?
Here's what I'm going to go with you on this. We need to deep dive into this because I'm serious bleeding black and gold, all right?
Now, good, yep, good.
I want to tell people as they're listening, all's fair in love, war, and football, all right? So I've got friends of mine, diehard Cowboy, diehard Ram. I love it all because I love the game. However, for my Steelers, I think that Cam Newton would be – I think Cam has got some serious skill. You know, I think that – Ben is incredible. I mean, in the many times I've been to their training camp, see him play, there is some serious skill there and talent, but there's also some significant injuries, more than one, but he
right.
has them well. And
right.
I'm saying, if he goes down, Cam could bring some serious game. They did this years ago with Michael Vick, you know, and I thought, you know, again, I know it was put in there, but you have to be ready because I was in there. You know, when you're standing there and watching them train and how big these guys are and hitting each other at that speed, eventually your body can only take a pounding like that for so long. I hope Ben takes us right back to the Super Bowl, but I think Cam has got some serious skill. Here's my one concern. I'm saying this in my opinion as a fan. I want to go on the record. You got the order to have that team that wins the Super Bowl. I say this always. There has to be chemistry. You've got to, you can have the best players in the world. If it doesn't jive, it doesn't work. You go back to the Steelers of the 70s, early 80s, no matter what it was, they weren't always great. They were just great when they had to be. Their chemistry worked. When you had Jerome Bettis, he had willpower. I mean, my thing is you can have skill. You can have the thrills, meaning the marquee name. You can, but you've got to have the willpower and the passion to make it want to work.
So, Brett, how do you feel, because this has been out there floating around, the idea of Antonio Brown returning to the Steelers?
I'll go drive him there right now.
Really?
I will pick him up. Yes. Here's why. I'm going to say this. In my brief encounters, I know everyone wants to go the other direction, crazy, out of his mind, all this stuff. My encounters, brief encounters, were amazingly great. And I'm just saying, the skill and talent level is unbelievable. I'll go get Le'Veon. I know Connors is bringing his running game, but he also, you know, he is a tough kid, but he gets, you know, he does great, and then he gets hurt. And, you know, it is a tough, tough game. So I would say this, but I think Antonio back there, I'm bringing him home. I'll pick him up right now in the car, load the bags, drive him.
Wow. We're talking to Brett Michaels, lead singer Poison, great rocker. I mentioned, Brett, I was a huge fan of Rock of Love. I think that you guys were ahead of your time. If you look at all these reality dating shows now, you guys were 10, 15 years ago, way ahead of the curve here. Could Rock of Love work in a reboot today? Could we relaunch that show, and would it work?
Well, let's go through a couple things. I'm just going to stats now. It was the number one cable show, highest rated for VH1 in the history of the channel. So for its time, we were beating network TV, but it was definitely an early, we brought
right,
that
right.
earlier than most of any of the other dating shows. We just said, look, I want a crazy dating show. Don't make it a throwback show. Just here and now. And I said, even today, I think, you know, you look at Hulu, you look at all these things, it still has top ratings. It still does great. But I think because it was fun, it was sincere. I mean, we created lingerie football, for God's sake. You know what I mean? We got a little mud lingerie football in there and motocross, and then you went on a date.
So Brett, I was a DJ around the time that, and by the way, we should mention, volume one of Brett Michaels' Auto Scrapography, has come out, on May the 12th, and it is available at shopbrettmichaels.com. Some really cool pictures and a really cool look back at your career. Take me through, because I said this before you came on, Every Rose Has Its Thorn was number one for about 6 months on the top 40 radio station that I was running in those days. What was your life like during that era?
It was, again, and I want to say this because I want to be very clear. I always live in the here and now, and you pay it forward. Very grateful bringing that past forward. I mean, this summer we're going out and doing stadiums with Def Leppard, Poison, Motley Crue. It's the biggest tour of the summer, and every state, two nights at Fenway, where the Brewers play in Milwaukee, stadium sold out in 43 minutes. So there's three generations of fans that are still loving the music, but during that time period, it's crazy because I came from a small town in Pennsylvania, came out here, wrote Every Rose. Here was the beauty of it. Nobody wanted our publishing, meaning no one wanted to sign the band. So we were independent band, and then I kept all of our publishing, which didn't, it didn't suck. It ended up being a blessing in some strange way. And it was such a crazy time period. But I'll tell you, if you come out to the show here, should the tour go when it is safe and healthy for fans, the bands, the crew, all everybody, when you see it, it's as kicking now as it's ever been. And that energy forward, I still throw a good party, good meet and greet. But that time period was, honest to God, mind-blowing. Like, it was everything was just, it just was a amazing time period. People wanted to have fun. People came to concerts, and it was a way of life, a lifestyle. And I've just tried to keep that moving and what put that passion into everything I do.
Brett, Every Rose, as Mason mentioned, was your number one, Poison's big number one hit of all time. What was the inspiration for that? Is that about a specific person, or did it just come to you in the night? Where'd you come up with the idea for that song?
Everything I write about has something to do or reflects on my real life. That was over a broken heart. We were out on the Look What the Cat Dragged In tour, driving our own mini, not the big one, the mini Winnebago around, going from club to club. And my girlfriend at the time, it was one of those payphone. I'm in a laundromat payphone, and I hear another voice in the background, a male voice in our apartment. And that was a heartbreaking, if anyone's ever been there, and I'm sure people listening have been to that heartbreaking, freaky moment. So I sit down and took that and focused my energy into the song Every Rose Has Its Thorn.
What was it like being a rock star in that era? With, you know, bands like, as you mentioned, some of them, Def Leppard, and I mean, I'm trying to think of the bands of that era, Bon Jovi.
Yeah, you're talking about the crew, Bon Jovi, and let's make one
White
thing
Snake,
clear, so I don't
Rat.
I didn't want to do it past tense. I just wanted to say, for those bands that you know, you look at John Bon Jovi, he's still selling out everywhere. I mean, selling out arenas and amphitheaters, and Motley and Leppard and Poison and. You know what I mean? It's still a good feeling to have such amazing, loyal fans. But go ahead. I don't know if that answered it.
Oh, no. I totally get it. No, I was going to ask you what it was like in terms of, because you were young. You were the lead singer for a rock band. What was it like in terms of, like, groupies and all that kind of scene?
Well, let me word it this way. There was always a good party, but no forcing and no coercion. There was none of that stuff, but the party was biblical. And I think it goes on a lot now. People just aren't as, let's use the right word, open about it. I think, you know, I go to a lot of shows now, other bands that are new and upcoming, and there's still a party going on. It just, you know, people still want to go out and have a good time. And if you look at it this way, to put it in perspective for some of the people, you think about a frat party, a college party, something going on. It was like that times a thousand. It just, that music was fun. It's primitive. It brings out the party in all of us. And we just, had a, I'll tell you, we had some really good times.
We're talking to Brett Michaels, the great rocker. Brett, a lot of people are down. A lot of people are miserable with this pandemic going on. And a lot of people are asking the question, are we ever going to get back to those shows you're talking about? Those live shows that you still go to and that you are so good at. Have you thought in your own head, do you know what that's going to look like or how we get back to it? Or have you started to process that far in the future?
It's really a great question. And here I'm talking about for me, I have to believe we are going back to this. It's going to be slightly different. I think it's going to take time. Again, I want to be very certain people understand health comes first, that being safe for the fans, the bands, the crew. I need sporting events. I mean, this really hit during my preseason baseball. I mean, I'm geared up. I'm a sports fanatic. And I'm like, I'm not able to go see the Cactus League, the Grapefruit League, everything's shutting down. And I'm going, this is a really serious disease. But I think the one thing for me, I have mentally stayed positive with no one that works, let me say this, with me, for me, in my office. No one, I never thought for one minute, for me, of letting anyone go. I said, I have to believe. And part of this is due to the fact I'm diabetic since the age of 6. I have to think positive without a victim mentality that we are going to come out of this stronger. And I don't know about you guys, but I need a sporting event. I need a concert.
Yeah.
I need to go back. I do. I'm not saying that's funny. I'm saying I need to go there. I need to drink a beer. I need to watch a game. I need to hug. I need to be able to pump gas without 6 gloves on.
Yep,
you know what I mean. In 2 masks and go to a ball game. I don't care what it is. Go to a hockey game, basketball game, and a concert, and hang out with my friends.
Well, we will get back there. It's going to take a little bit of time, but we will be definitely get back there. Hey, Brett, appreciate you coming on. Brett Michaels, Auto Scrapography. It is officially out now. It's available at shopbrettmichaels.com. I'll say on your behalf, go Steelers.
Go Steelers.
All right.
Thank you, Brett. Stay safe, man.
Thank you for your awesomeness. I appreciate that. And we're going to wish this back to being awesome again and everyone back in the stadiums.
Cool. Thanks, Brett. Hope so.
Thank you.
Yeah, he's like us, man. He's like relentlessly positive.
Go Steelers.
Yoy. And double yoy.
I was going to say, he does have a very heavy Pittsburgh accent. And it's also good to know that like the rich and famous are on the same page as us as far as needing sports back.
Yeah, no question about it. Well, you know who's not on our page, apparently, is Blake Snell.
Yeah, let's get into that when we come back. That's a pretty amazing piece of sound.
We will play you something Blake Snell said on Twitch last night that I find to be really upsetting. That's coming up next for you, Mason and Ireland, 710 ESPN. Yeah, where I come from, Poison, gigantic deal, man. When I was doing Top 40 Radio in Toledo, Poison, Def Leppard, Bon Jovi, nonstop, those bands were making it happen. Thanks to Brett Michaels for joining us there. So we have been all excited. Bob Nightingale joined us yesterday from USA Today, and Bob told us there's a firm plan now, including a 100-page set of guidelines for how to handle COVID-19 for Major League Baseball to come back with a June 2.0 spring training and a start to the season. He said 90-10 that they'd be playing by the 4th of July. And then along comes Blake Snell.
Y'all got to understand, too, because y'all going to be like, bro, Blake, play for the love of the game, man. What's wrong with you, bro? Money should not be a thing. Bro, I'm risking my life. What do you mean it should not be a thing? It 100% should be a thing. If I'm going to play, I should be getting the money I signed to be getting paid. I should not be getting half of what I'm getting paid because the season's cut in half on top of a 33% cut of the half that's already there. So I'm really getting like 25%. On top of that, it's getting taxed. So imagine how much I'm actually making to play. You know what I'm saying? Like, I ain't making shit. And on top of that, so all that money's gone. And now I play risking my life. And if I get the Rona, on top of that, if I get the Rona, guess what happens with that? Oh yeah, that's in my body forever. That damage is not going to be like the damage that was done to my body. That's going to be there forever. So now I got to play with that on top of that. So y'all got to understand, man, for me to take a pay cut is not happening because the risk is through the roof. It's a shorter season, less pay. Like, no, I got to get my money. I'm not playing unless I get mine. Okay. And that's just the way it is for me. Like, I'm sorry if you guys think differently, but the risk is way the hell higher and the amount of money I'm making is way lower. Why would I think about doing that? To lose all of that money and then go play and then be on lockdown, not around my family, not around the people I love, and get paid way the hell less, and then the risk of injury runs every time I step on the field, it's just, it's not worth it. It's not. I love baseball to death. It's just not.
Wow. I'm not even sure where to start.
Wow.
Let's begin with this. If I was a baseball agent, if I was Scott Boras or, you know, anybody who represents baseball players.
Yep.
After hearing that clip, I would immediately get on the phone with my clients today and say, you don't talk publicly about money ever. Period. End. Do not discuss it publicly. Do not do it in a podcast. Do not do it on a Zoom feed. Do not do it on Twitter. Do not do it on Instagram. Do not do it. Because Blake Snell, in less than 2 minutes, just blew up his marketability forever. That guy will never get another endorsement, and I don't care how many strikeouts or Cy Young Awards he wins. Mace, if you look up the definition of tone deaf, there should be a picture of Blake Snell.
Yeah, he is on a five-year, $50 million contract, which came from a $3 million signing bonus. And for him to be complaining about how much I have to give up, or complaining about the fact, just the fact that I have to pay taxes. Guess what, Blake Snell? We all have to pay taxes. Think about how hard it is for everybody else out there. This is an opportunity for Major League Baseball players to, and I understand they want to preserve their collective bargaining agreement, negotiation rights for next year and all that stuff. And they don't want a precedent to be set by this. But given the fact that both sides seem to accept the fact that there won't be a precedent set, to complain about the money you're making and the money you would make under this scenario is absolutely insane. And you have seriously become public enemy number one in the fan in the mind of sports fans. He has basically confirmed what sports fans feel is the worst possible professional sports stereotype, which is these guys are only doing it for the money and they don't care about us.
If I was the owner of the Tampa Bay Rays, or do they just call them the Tampa Rays now?
Tampa Rays, yeah.
I would come out today and say, we're not interested in having Blake Snell play for us this year, nor do we want to pay him any money so he can just go ahead and take the year off. And I think that Blake Snell would be left with no choice but to come groveling back. To his lack of understanding, how about him saying, I'm putting my life on the line? What do you think all the first responders have been doing? And by the way, Blake, they're not making $50 million a year. All right, imagine if all the doctors and nurses said, you know what? They're not paying me enough. They're not paying me enough overtime. I'm not going in. I mean, it's just, it's such a disconnect but from what is actually happening in the world. I'm blown away by his ignorance. I really am. I mean, if I was his agent, I would be writing his, I would be arranging a press conference for tonight for him to walk this back.
Tell you what, we will take a quick break, and then Mark Teixeira from ESPN will join us. He's been pretty definitive about his view of what should happen in this negotiation between Major League Baseball and the Major League Baseball Players Association, and we'll get his thoughts on what Blake Snell said last night on Twitch. Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN. All right, so we just played that sound from Blake Snell on Twitch from last night. who has indicated that he is not playing for less. He's not taking less money in order to play a Major League Baseball season starting in July. And one guy who's been really outspoken about this, and we watch him all the time, we see him on GetUp, we see him across all the ESPN platforms, is Mark Teixeira, and Mark joins us right now. Hey, Mark, how are you, man?
I'm great, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, we appreciate you coming on, Tex. And we're still mad at you that you didn't re-sign with the Angels. But
oh,
I think
in 10 years, we've finally gotten over it.
Yeah.
Listen, there were plenty of days when it was 35 degrees in April in New York. And I'm like, man, what was I thinking?
but it all worked out for you, man. You got your World Series champion. And I know you and your wife are from back there, so you got to play in front of your family, which is cool. All right, so I want to be careful here. We just played the Blake Snell sound, and I actually think that you can make a case that over the years, the owners normally win out in these negotiations. The owners, I have sympathy for the players' unions in these leagues because your careers are finite. You don't have, you're not going to own a team for 35 years or 50 years like these guys do. But in this case, I think Blake is disconnected. The problem is, Mark, you as a player, and you were in the union, you guys are trained to stick together and to stand up for each other and to collectively fight against this ownership group. If you are still active, how do you take what Blake Snell said today and spin it? What would you be saying if you were an active player in the union after hearing what he said?
Well, first of all, you're exactly right that players from day one are told to distrust the owners. The owners have been trying to pull the wool over your eyes for decades, and any chance they get, they're going to stick it to you. So players are going to stick together in these early days. They're going to stick to the party line. And listen, Tony Clark has a job to do. He's supposed to fight for his players. Scott Boras is the best agent probably in sports history. He's done so much for the game. He's fighting for his players. I don't blame those guys at all. And by the way, I don't blame Blake Snell for standing up and saying these things. The problem is, this is a fundamental problem about the players' fight right now. These are unprecedented times. This is not a normal labor deal. This is not a typical negotiation that you do every 5 years for a CBA. This is a group of owners trying to make something work to bring baseball back to a country that is hurting right now. And you're right, it comes off a little bit insensitive and a little tone deaf when a player, has a reaction like Blake Snell had.
Describe the actual financial. I mean, I don't want to get too down in the weeds on this, but the players got some money, right? They got some money when this pandemic first hit. Now they're talking about a 50-50 revenue split. What are baseball players concerned about other than just the amount of money that they'll be getting?
Well, the players are concerned about a few things. Number one, they thought they were guaranteed a full salary no matter what. And listen, if I'm going to go out there and play, risk injury, risk all of these things, getting sick and all the issues we have still with COVID-19, there is absolutely an argument to say that I should get a full salary for a full day's pay. That being said, the owners have basically come back to him and said, listen, guys, I get it, but we're losing a ton of money here. We can't reopen the game if we pay you that full game. So players are, number one, don't trust what the owners just told them. And number two, if they bend a little bit here, if they basically, take it for the team, then they think that next year when they negotiate for the new CBA, the owners are just going to keep trying to ram stuff down their throats, and all of a sudden they're a really strong union that has been the best union in all of pro sports is all of a sudden going to crater. And so that's why players are standing up right now and not giving in.
Mark Teixeira is our guest. Tex, I actually believe that cooler heads are going to prevail, and they're going to get smart guys in a room, and they're going to figure out a compromise and do this. But let's say that doesn't happen. Who would then, do you think, take the blame publicly? Obviously, fans would lose because they get no baseball. But who publicly has more to lose if they shut it down?
Well, listen, I'm probably biased. I never want, you know, former teammates and players to be blamed. And that's why I came out on ESPN 2 days ago and said the players should take this deal. They should take this 50-50 deal and then negotiate from a place of strength for next year for the CBA negotiations. And basically, they have a very small window where they can actually have a win-win situation where, you know what, owners, I'm going to give you your win in 2020, but next year we're going to put all of these different things that we've been asking for back on the table, and you're going to take care of us players in 2021. That being said, if cooler heads don't prevail, if we don't play baseball this year, I got to think the fans are going to turn against the players. I mean, even the minimum salary this year is $600,000. And I've done some back of the napkin, mathematics on this. If players get 30-40% of their total salary this year, and you have a rookie who's never played in the big league still making $200,000, 99% of America would take that in a second, right? And so you have so many people on unemployment, so many people afraid that they're going to go hungry, they're going to get sick. All these frontline workers, working double shifts. And players are complaining that the minimum that they're going to make is $200,000, and the guys that have big contracts are going to be making tens of million dollars still. So whether it's right or wrong, I think that the public in this pandemic will blame the players if we don't play baseball this year.
Mark Teixeira is with us, ESPN baseball analyst, Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN. What are you hearing sort of on the inside, that this is going to be worked out? And then what about the safety aspect of things? We were told yesterday there may be a manual or a piece of documentation that's 100 pages long with all the safety considerations going into this thing. What are you hearing about that aspect of it?
Well, I will neither confirm or deny the 100-page manual. I'll let you guys do a little more research on that. That being said, I do believe that Major League Baseball has done a really good job of basically telling the players, guys, we're going to do everything we can to take care of you. Baseball is a fraternity. Whether the owners and players get along during negotiation times is irrelevant. It's a fraternity. You have coaches that are in their 60s and 70s. You have support staff. I mean, dear friends on the Yankees, that have been around for decades, that are on the payroll, that want to be traveling with the team, that want to be in that clubhouse, those guys want to be safe. So I think baseball will do what it takes to be safe. The inside game that I'm hearing right now changes every single day. It really does. And, you know, right now, the owners have said this is what we're willing to do. They're going to lose a ton of money. Like, they're losing a ton of money no matter what. And some teams are going to lose $50 million. Some teams are going to lose $150 million. And everyone else is kind of in between. And I think there is a difference between a player not making as much money as he should and an ownership or an ownership group losing hundreds of millions of dollars. So it changes every single day. I'll talk to players and I'm like, yeah, I agree with you. And then I'll talk to someone that in a front office and like, oh yeah, you're right, I agree with you. So right now I think we really need to, as you said, get some smart people in the room, have some calmer heads prevail, tone down the rhetoric, and really just talk about how we can get this season started.
All right, Tex, last thing for me. You ended up winning your world championship with the Yankees. You finished your career there. You live in New York. You're an East Coast guy. We're out here in California. We think the Dodgers are going to the World Series, and we want the Yankees to meet them there when they get there. But I'm trying to get my head. You would be able to give a better answer to this than we can. All the reports and all the news stories we see out of New York is that it's ground zero with this COVID-19. Can you see the Yankees getting to play in Yankee Stadium? Or as a Yankee alum, is it in your mind that they're probably going to have to end up going to Florida to play these games if we get up and running?
Well, I hope that the Yankees can play in New York and the Dodgers can play in L.A. because I think that there are obviously inherent risks anytime you open up a stadium. Knowing how proud the Yankees are of Yankee Stadium, what it means to people to be in those confines, I got to think they will do everything possible to play games at Yankee Stadium. And if they have to block off the South Bronx for two blocks in each direction and hose down with Clorox, I think they'll do it. And I would hate to see this season start and the Yankees playing in a spring training facility for the 82 games that they have to play. So I think for baseball, for the Yankees, for the competitive balance of the game, I hope that every team gets to play in their home stadium.
All right. Hey, listen, Mark Teixeira, thanks a lot for coming on, man.
Thank you, Mark. We appreciate it.
Anytime, guys.
All right, there's Mark Teixeira. He's a really good guy.
Yeah, and he's really, really honest, you can tell. And, boy, that's an interesting dilemma with Yankee Stadium, isn't it? They've got such a good team this year.
Yep.
They went out and, you know, they went out and signed Gerrit Cole. They got that unbelievable outfield with Aaron Judge and Giancarlo Stanton. And you know, they're the favorite to
yep.
come out of the American League. But New York is ground zero. And so you got to listen to the doctors. That's going to be a tough decision to see if they can do that.
Yeah, it is. It really is. And by the way, the same will go for L.A. Although, you know, I mean, increasingly, it sounds like we're slowly getting there, slowly, in phases. So we'll see if we get to a phase, I guess, you know, they're calling these phases, a phase where Dodger games can be held in Dodger Stadium. But like we've been talking about, it is a TV show. And so if it happens in Arizona, if it happens at Dodger
right.
Stadium, it's still going to be a TV show to us because fans aren't going to be able to be there anyway. So,
And
yes.
you got to remember, we're a sports show. So you and I come on here and we, you know, every day and we talk about how we're relentlessly positive and we want sports back, blah, blah, blah. There are loud voices on the other side of us of saying, look, sports is the last thing that should come back and that we got to listen to the doctors. So you've got to balance all of it and you've got to get guys like Dr. Fauci and you got to hear their opinions and say, OK, if we follow your directives, is this safe? It appears that all the leagues are moving towards that. Moving towards a situation where they have medical approval, but there's going to be some pretty strict guidelines. And if one of the guidelines is the Yankees go to Florida and the Dodgers go to Arizona, if you're a sports fan, you just got to say, okay, we'll take what we can get.
Right. And by the way, that is what Bob Nightingale said. He said there was a 100-page document with safety precautions that are going to be taken and all sorts of protocols that will need to be followed in order for baseball to restart in July. But, you know, it is here we are. It is May the 14th. Spring training could conceivably be next month, which is obviously really, really exciting. And, yeah, and our job is to come on. I'm seeing some criticism now. Our job is to come on here and be positive every day. And on top of that, you know, sports is going to play a huge role in sort of helping to heal us from what has been an absolutely tragic point on the planet. I mean, this has been a nightmare for all of us. But the fact that if it can be done safely, it can be conducted safely, there are protocols in place, and the smart guys, the doctors, the scientists are able to sign off on a plan for baseball to return, then let's get baseball back because it will give us all something to focus on. You know, in the same way, I mean, you're going to laugh at this. In the same way we had Tiger King, which was for 2 weeks about the biggest deal in the world, and nobody's referenced in weeks now. The Last Dance, which we spend a big chunk of our show every Monday talking about the episodes of The Last Dance. We're getting ready for those 30 for 30 specials on Sunday nights. The Armstrong one, the Bruce Lee one, the Maguire Sosa one, all those ones. We need things to... It's important that people be entertained on top of everything else while they are being asked to stay at home and to stay, you know, socially distanced from life itself. So, yes, we are being very optimistic, and we're going to continue to be very optimistic. Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN.